Hello, and welcome to Sporecast, a Canadian podcast discussing patient-oriented research, research done in partnership with patients. I'm Beverly Pomeroy.
And I'm Lisa Ridgway, and we are patient partners who sit on a variety of patient councils and advisory groups, all with the vision to encourage research to answer research questions that matter to patients and aim to improve healthcare.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you will be inspired to get involved and create your own impact in order to support healthcare research being more relevant and meaningful. Please enjoy the show.
In a new home, and brought to you from home, Sporecast.
Well, welcome to another episode of Sporecast, and this is part of our partnership and collaboration with BC Support Unit. In our COVID series. Lisa, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Bev. I am super excited to have Allison with us today. And I'd just like to acknowledge and share the privilege that many of us have because we are located within the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory of the Indigenous peoples across British Columbia. And some of us are calling in from different parts of BC, which is home to almost 200 distinct First Nations and the Métis chartered communities, each with their own unique traditions and history. So thank you for that privilege. Back to you, Beth.
Thanks, Lisa. Well, today we mentioned we have Allison. You're going to do an intro in a second, but we're going to be talking a little bit today about Clinical Trials BC, which is an operating unit within the BC Academic Health Science Network that we have here in British Columbia. And really, it's about working with diverse partners with a collaborative approach and talking about clinical trials. That's exactly what we're going to talk about today and how that affects the clinical research community here in BC. I have to be honest, Allison, after Lisa does her intro, is I'm not super familiar with clinical trials, which I think is maybe part of our conversation as a patient partner sort of lens, because I'm learning there's a lot to it for patient partners. So Lisa, go ahead and introduce Allison. I'm like super thrilled today.
Yeah, me too. Allison, you are the unit director of the Clinical Trials BC, otherwise known as CTBC. You're actually a clinical research professional with 20 years of experience leading health research studies and projects teams at both community and academic levels. And as part of your role with Clinical Trials, you have led a national initiative to engage participants about their experience with clinical research in order to enhance patient and public participation. Oh, there's so much to talk to you about. And the overall participation of people as clinical trial participants. And you've got some really cool stuff in your background. You've got outbreak investigation. How timely. So, Allison, you know, let's just jump right in and talk to you right now about the best thing about your job.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa and Bev, for inviting me today. I'm very excited. And so the best thing about my job, I would say right now, it's really an exciting time. It's a great opportunity for us to bring together, connect with people, facilitate discussions on how we can best support clinical trial teams and investigators in the conduct of their trials. But that collaboration and openness of groups, individuals, everybody right now is aiming to sort of do whatever we can to combat or fight COVID-19, and trials are one option that patients and the public are looking to. And just being able to support anybody that's trying to do that work or move it forward is really inspiring.
Wow, that's great. What a great answer. And I guess that's part of my question, you know, and my learning with clinical trials is whenever I thought of clinical trials, even being sort of an experienced patient partner, I always thought, well, clinical trials involves patients as participants of clinical trials. But, you know, so maybe talk to us a little bit about the difference between the patient participant and then the patient partner who's engaged with you as a partner in clinical trials, because I actually didn't realize that that was like an option.
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, a lot of the work that I did, as Lisa mentioned, was engaging with the research participants on their experience during a trial. But of course, during that engagement with them, they're giving a lot of feedback that then could be taken to research investigators, those that design trials, those supporting on the trial, ways they can improve that conduct of the trial, the design, the way they communicate with research participants. And what that really does, I think, is open the door as to now, actually, those research participants are now informing in such a way as a patient partner to the researcher. But so past participants are really great, have really great insights and could actually inform as a source for investigators and those that design trials, fund trials, support the operations of them to get that feedback on ways to reduce burden to research participants. So it's really about engaging and maybe patients that have the lived experience or the condition under study, absolutely, and those that have participated in research clinical trials in the past. If you can access their experiences, input, so it might not be that the trial is originally the strict definition of patient-oriented, although there are ways it could be. I really see it more as that engagement, involvement, informing, and consulting. And that goes a long way to when you're planning the study design. One of the challenges is enrollment. Are you going to be able to enroll the number of participants you need to get the evidence and the outcomes to prove whether one treatment works better than the other? So if you're having challenges with enrollment or recruitment, it is best to talk to those that you're, the patients or the public, about what that might be, or those that have participated in your research in the past, what could you do better to remove barriers to participation, assist them in that journey, reduce the burden. And also there's a lot of opportunity for materials, whether it's informed consent forms, communication of study results to participants, where patient partners can engage and review and provide insights to make sure that those materials and even questionnaires you're giving to participants is appropriate, understandable, clear, and easy to use. So those are the types of ways.
I love the pollination and the sort of cross-fertilization between your unit, clinical trials, and the BC support unit. And Research Ethics BC, we're all working together for almost the same goals, like involving patient partners as participants or as true partners in research. So for your unit, because you're responsible for clinical trials, what's your highest priority right now?
I would say one of the highest priorities at the moment is finding ways to, like I mentioned before, facilitate and bring people together to have discussions about what can we do, how should we be doing that, how can we adapt to the situational change that we're undergoing right now. And so really figuring out ways we have worked to quickly in early April, we recognized a lot of discussions were happening by email, one-on-one, people were coming through AHSN or through us, we realized, you know, it would be great to have everybody in a single forum to talk about these same things because everybody's having similar challenges or asking about resources. They were asking what trials are happening, what are coming up. So early April, we did form a very informal network. We just invited everybody we'd been communicating with and anybody that wanted to join to a one-hour meeting to learn from investigators. They talked about rapid fire, their COVID clinical trials they were either doing or planning.
Wow.
And then we spent the next third of the meeting going around the province and asking about what challenges people are having in supporting or doing the trials. What opportunities do people see? And then the third part of the meeting, we had anyone that had supports or resources or knew of initiative that could help speak as well. And so that was very well received. Yeah. And we had a second very similar structured meeting in May, and we're planning for one next week as well. So it really is evolving from the needs of that community, and we're just trying to figure out how can we support them and bring them together in ways that will reduce duplication, increase collaboration, really so that we can support the trials to happen.
Wow. And a lot of people attended that, right?
Yeah. The first meeting, I think we had, we definitely had around 78 people and about the same for the second, and around 130 people that have indicated they would like to receive invitations.
And it sounds like that's part of what we were discussing, like how we've all now had to sort of pivot because of COVID-19 and the sort of immediacy of that disease and pandemic. So I'm wondering, so you've brought everybody together and that's part of the adaptation, but what else have researchers had to do, or what have you had to do within your role to adapt to the present circumstances other than, bringing everybody together, that's a huge part of it. But what else have you had to do, or what else have researchers had to do to adapt to conducting research and clinical trials in BC?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think initially what was difficult was a lot of the clinical trials or research that wasn't COVID or wasn't really critical needed to be put on pause so that the health authorities and clinicians and health professionals and leaders could focus on COVID-19, which is what we needed to do, and pay very close attention to the needs of the patients and the ecosystem, healthcare system. So that meant that the research had to be paused, and that had a lot of impacts, especially in trials on the teams and their jobs at the time. And some people could be redeployed. Other people stepped up and said, look, we have time now. How can we help? And even our team, what can we do? What can we do to help? What does this mean for us? And we had a lot of discussions at AHSN with our leadership, Sterling and the team, and then within our own unit. What does that really mean? What impacts is it having on our team? Personally, we had to really reflect a lot on that and make sure we're supporting our team, then branching out. How can we support the people we're working with? How can we learn more and be more aware of what's happening with patients and the public and their needs? And I think learning every day. I think we spent a lot of time to try to understand and learn and listen, and then talk, where could we possibly help, or what might our role be here?
I love the fact that you asked, that you weren't sure what the roles were, because these are such different times. And you went out with humility and said, we don't know what to do. I mean, in some ways, you know what to do, but in other ways, it's very different. So you just asked, and you're supporting your team, and that's amazing.
And our team has been just fantastic and supporting me. And really, I think we work together to say, okay, well, this is changing. This is the sense of what we're getting right now, this week, today, and bringing forward thoughts as well. For example, the third week in March, our regulatory affairs and quality officer, that's Jean Smart. She said, I think the community really needs to know what all the regulatory changes are around clinical trials. They're governed through Health Canada and through international guidelines, and making sure that we could be a source of information for the community. So we realized, yes, let's implement that quickly. Another one was with the pause on research and focus on COVID trials, there would be some people needing to support those trials that perhaps hadn't worked in clinical trials before, regular healthcare professionals or other personnel. And there are some requirements to be a member of the team on a clinical trial for training, good clinical practice, and some other ethical pieces. And so we developed what we called rapid COVID clinical trial training, put together a series of 10 units, 20-minute little videos with some reading materials that was accessible to anybody that sort of needed that quick, rapid intro training so they could support a COVID trial.
Is that sort of like the best practice guidance, or what's that all about?
So the good clinical practice is actually, it's an international council, but really the original intention was, if we can all follow the best practices in clinical trials, the way we conduct them and design them and report on them across countries and come together and agree on what those are, then we can reduce the need to do multiple studies in multiple places to license those products and drugs and vaccines. So it was to harmonize. And then it became, so it's International Council on Harmonization, but really the piece that affects a lot of the day-to-day of the clinical trial teams is what's called good clinical practice, or GCP. So we want to make sure that they had training appropriate to that and appropriate to their roles. So if it was someone in pharmacy or a nurse that would need to administer medication, that they could have the basic training that they'd need appropriate to their role in the study.
Wow. So you guys have really learned to pivot during COVID time. that's a lot to shift. I mean, when you think about everything that you've done. And so I'm kind of curious, a lot of us, you know, have been involved in different patient-oriented or participatory research. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if you can speak a little bit. I'm wondering if, you know, I know you guys have done a survey. It was like a national survey, I think, a clinical trial participation survey in public opinion. And I'm wondering if having that survey and that feedback, did that help inform some of the changes and some of the things that you're doing now? I'm just wondering if you can speak to that, because I just think, talk about being transparent. When I went and looked on the website, you were very, and your team were very forward and transparent in saying, we did the survey and, you know, people, patients and public were disappointed, you know, with such and such and such. And you just really sort of put it out there. So I'm curious, is that, talk about the survey a little bit, and then has that helped to inform how you've been able to pivot? Like, has it created a little bit of a model for you moving forward?
Great question, Bev, and thank you. I think the participation survey was really that attempt, and it was a number of years in the making. Originally, BC CRIN, our predecessor, the BC Clinical Research Infrastructure Network, it was really a vision, let's engage research participants. And it was before the support unit and before sort of the strategy for patient-oriented research was implemented. So we didn't know a lot about methodologies or ways to do that. We just knew we needed to talk to the participants and get that feedback. And we discovered a lot along the way. And we discovered there were things we didn't ask that now we would have, and trying to adapt to those learnings. And how can we communicate those findings? And then how can we work with the trial community and stakeholders to advance in little ways, or just create awareness? The public opinion poll was a similar thing. It was to engage the public around their awareness and opinions of clinical trials in Canada. What was really interesting in both surveys, and I would say, and you would both be much better informed to say whether you agree with this, that the public, the research participants, and potentially patient partners, why do they engage or participate or want to help with clinical trials? It was, in all cases, sort of altruistic reasons. You know, we did find clinical research participants, they participate because they want to help, and primarily wanted to help others, even if the trial wasn't going to help them. And that came through in the public opinion survey of why Canadians want to support trials. And I would imagine with patient partners that it's, you know, similar motivation. So you asked about learning that we're taking now. And I don't know if we took specific learnings from those other than the fact that we need to ask and listen and then act. So we actually used that a little bit in our presentations was listen, learn, act. So I think it's just that way of operating that our team is, it's helped us open up to see the benefits of that. And we try to take that approach in our work, whether it's with our research colleagues, participants, our leaders, decision makers, health authority partners, just sort of an approach that we learn by doing that, the value, I think.
And definitely getting that on a t-shirt. Listen, learn, act.
No kidding. Especially that middle bit about learn, like reflect on what's happened, try and do it better next time. But I think so many people want to participate because we're all feeling sort of out of control. And this is one way to put, you know, the glass half full spin on the whole thing. Hey, I'm participating in a trial. I don't know what, you know, the outcome of that trial is. Who does these days? But it's some way to help, just to put your hand up and say, I'm going to jump in. So kudos to you, Allison, and to the clinical trials for that sort of outreach. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We've had a lot of support. Like through that work, it was really started in BC, and it was the research teams, coordinators, investigators in BC all also saw the benefit, came together. And then when we realized, you know, let's take this national. So it was sort of led by BC and BC and went national, and the public opinion was in partnership with Ontario. So I do want to definitely acknowledge that the research teams and institutes in BC are just fantastic. And that's when you talked about other parts that you really enjoy about the job, it's definitely being able to work with those groups.
Well, you know, Allison, you're coming back, right, to our town hall on July the 9th. So we can pick up a couple of threads that I really want to work with you on. But I just, at the end, maybe, can we wrap up with a goal or where you see like a long-term goal for for clinical trials in BC under the AHSM?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. We had this conversation this morning about the big lofty goals. And is the vision for clinical trials BC or is it for clinical trials in BC? You know, BC clinical trials. So I often find that it's more a vision for British Columbia. When we talk about that and we think about it in our team, we want to see BC develop as sort of a collaborative, networked destination for world-class trials. So when trial opportunities open up, and I think COVID-19 is a really good example, there's the solidarity trial from the WHO, the Canadian arm is CATCO. We want to make sure that BC is a place where those trials will happen. Opportunities for patients and the public to participate would provide more trial options to patients, and that the trial participants are supported throughout their whole journey and beyond, and that just becomes a standard practice for us.
Sign me up.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean, we could just probably talk to you for a long time, Allison, and just how important it is for people to get involved. And it's so nice to know that people are getting involved for the altruistic reasons, and that you as a team have brought together a number of different organizations and stakeholders and have this collaborative approach, I think is quite extraordinary. And I think it sounds like you had that to begin with. So it wasn't a heavy lift for you and your organization. So I just want to thank you so much for being our guest today. And we really look forward to having you on our town hall, which for those that are listening is July 9th, coming up in a little bit. And Allison, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Wow. And, normally we say, come out to Timmy's and have a donut, but it would have to be a virtual one. Anyways, you would be in the middle. So we do really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you again.
Thank you, Bev and Lisa, for inviting me. This has been a fantastic way to spend the morning.
Sporecast is now Zoomed to you, courtesy of hosts and creators Bev Pomeroy and Lisa Ridgway. With the able assistance of a small but mighty team of production partners at the BC Support Unit, powered by Communications Lead, Justin Otteson, Project Manager, Michelle Duffy, and me, Sporecast's technical producer and occasional announcer, I'm Kent Cadigan-Lofsgaard.
If you'd like to get in touch with us and learn more, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Spore_cast. That's Spore_cast, CAST, # Sporecast. We can also be reached via email at sporecast1@gmail.com or visit our website, www.sporecast.ca.
If you're listening to this episode, you can now also watch and subscribe for more Sporecast episodes featured on the BC Support Unit's YouTube channel. The BC Support Unit and the Academic Health Science Network are provincial partners in Canada's strategy for patient-oriented research.